This is VOA News. I'm Victor Beatty. The U.S. Tuesday reimposed sanctions that have been in place before the 2015 Iran nuclear agreement, with President Donald Trump warning anyone doing business with Iran will not be doing business with the U.S. State Department spokesperson Heather Nauert said the sanctions will be enforced and called on Tehran to reach a broader deal that will address what she called its destabilizing behavior.
The United States is willing to engage in talks with the Iranian regime, but we're looking for a commitment that they're willing to make fundamental changes in their behavior. Iran will need to think seriously about the consequences of its behavior and the consequences that it's having on its country and especially on the Iranian people, and they should choose to correct their course of action going forward.
The first phase of sanctions targets the purchase of dollars, metals trading, coal, industrial software, and the auto sector. The second will deal with Iran's energy trading. Iraqi Prime Minister Haider al-Abadi, an ally and neighbor of Iran, said he opposes the sanctions but will abide by them to protect Iraq's interests. Cecile Shea of the Chicago Council on Global Affairs said China is among the big winners in this dispute.
Because they're going to have a steadier access to Iran's oil, and of course, China uses a lot of imported oil to maintain its economy.
The other winners, she said, are Russia and Iran's hardliners. Kenya and Tanzania observed Tuesday the 20th anniversary of al-Qaeda's deadly bombings of the U.S. embassies in Nairobi and Dar es Salaam. More than 250 people were killed and 5,000 wounded. Robert Godek is the U.S. ambassador in Kenya.
The 20th anniversary of the attacks here in Nairobi and in Dar es Salaam, we say clearly and loudly that although we have suffered, we are not the...
Deputy U.S. Secretary of State John Sullivan said al-Qaeda failed in its mission to undermine U.S. values. This is VOA News. The U.S. said while it's up to Canada and Saudi Arabia to settle their diplomatic differences, Washington is seeking more information about the detention of rights activists in the Saudi kingdom. Once again, U.S. spokesperson Nauert.
We have had conversations with them about this as it pertains to Canada, but we would encourage both governments to work out their issues together. It's a diplomatic issue. Saudi Arabia and Canada can certainly stand to work it out together. We would encourage the government of Saudi Arabia overall to address and respect due process and also publicize information on some of its legal cases.
The row began after Ottawa called on Saudi authorities to release several detained women's rights campaigners. Riyadh responded, declaring the Canadian ambassador persona non grata and cutting off new trade and investment. Iván Duque was sworn in Tuesday as Colombia's new president, pledging to unite a divided nation and revise and toughen a 2016 peace agreement with Marxist rebels that ended the Western Hemisphere's longest conflict.
Hoy, Colombia enfrenta enormes retos.
At his swearing-in ceremony, Mr. Duque acknowledged the many challenges facing the South American nation, including gang violence and the illicit drug trade. The country is also trying to cope with nearly a million Venezuelans fleeing the country's economic and political crisis. U.S. Defense Secretary Jim Mattis Tuesday gave his backing to creation of a space-focused military command, perhaps a new combatant command for space.
Absolutely. We need to address space as a developing warfighting domain, and a combatant command is certainly one thing that we can establish. This is a process we're in. We are in complete alignment with the president's concern about protecting our assets in space.
A defense report to Congress on the matter, proffered by President Donald Trump, is expected in coming days. Nigeria's acting president fired the head of the intelligence service after security services staged what's described as a brief takeover of parliament building. Lawmakers were on a two-month recess. Vice President Yemi Osinbajo, filling in for vacationing President Muhammadu Buhari, called the unauthorized takeover a gross violation of the constitutional order. The European Union and U.S. Tuesday condemned violent attacks targeting the opposition in Zimbabwe. In the wake of last week's election won by the ruling ZANU-PF party, six people were killed in opposition protests. China's exports surged in July despite the imposition of U.S. tariffs. The Trump administration said the second installment of $50 billion with a 25% penalty on Chinese imports will go into effect August 23rd. In a special congressional election Tuesday, Republican Troy Balderson claimed victory, holding a narrow lead over Democrat Danny O'Connor in the state of Ohio and heading into the crucial midterm elections in November. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bote in Washington. Today is Wednesday, August 8th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Today is deadline day for prospective presidential candidates in the DRC to register with the Electoral Commission.
We hope that once we're going to have fair elections in the DRC, Congolese people will choose the best candidate that's going to bring a rule of law in the DRC, and I hope that candidate is going to be Felix Tshisekedi.
Abraham Luakabuanga is the National Communications Secretary for the Opposition Union for Democracy and Social Progress Party in the DRC. Zimbabwe opposition will challenge July 30th election results. Kenya commemorates 20th anniversary of U.S. embassy bombing, and Ivory Coast President pardons 800 opposition prisoners, including former First Lady Simone Gbagbo.
It's been about 7 years now that our people are in prison. So we are very, very happy about it, even though we know that most of them have been sick for months and years.
Jean-Guyver Tchéide is the vice president for finance of the Ivorian Popular Front Party of former President Gbagbo. Some South Sudan opposition want to give peace a chance, and UN agencies help Somali refugees return from Yemen. Those stories plus our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Today is the deadline for candidates who want to participate in the Democratic Republic of Congo's December 23rd presidential election to register. Yesterday, Felix Tshisekedi, leader of the opposition Union for Democracy and Social Progress, the UDPS, officially registered. Vital Kamari of the Union for the Congolese National also registered. But supporters of Moise Katumbi, a former governor of Katanga province, say the government is preventing their leader from returning to DRC to register, an accusation the government has denied. Abraham Luakabuanga is the National Communications Secretary for the UDPS, says UDPS supporters were attacked during Mr. Tshisekedi's registration.
This afternoon, President Felix Tshisekedi was not alone. I may say 100,000 of followers and members of the party were with him, actually, to go along with him in order for him to get registered. And I may tell you that everything went well until the end when he stepped out from the office. That's where we had a catastrophe. Police start shooting real bullets, and we don't know how many people have been killed or maybe have been wounded, because we had to leave, to fly away from the place in order to secure our life and the presidential life.
So have you officially registered your protest to the authorities concerning this?
I may say our services, actually, security services, working first to collect the number of wounded and maybe misplaced people or injured or more fatal injurious people. Then after that, we're going to work with official authorities, but also the MONUSCO, which is the UN mission in the Congo, in order for them to know exactly what happened after President Felix has registered from the CENI. And this is actually one of the situations that we really disagree, because a lot of candidates came down to the CENI, get registered, and went home without any casualty. Why should UDPS all the time face this kind of violence from our security services? This is, you know, we raise our voice to say no, this is more than enough. We've been losing thousands of people since we've been in this battle, and we hope that once we're going to have fair elections in the DRC, Congolese people will choose the best candidate that's going to bring a rule of law in the DRC, and I hope that candidate is going to be Felix Tshisekedi.
Is Felix Tshisekedi safe at the moment following the action by the police?
Yes, actually, he's home, but like I said, because he was secure, because he was on a car. But now imagine, we were like 4 or 5 miles away from our headquarters. A lot of our followers, they don't have cars. They have to take public transportation. So it was almost, you know, evening time. So how many of them were arrested or jailed, we don't know yet. So we have to wait a couple hours to be able, you know, to bring out a report. This should have been, you know, a good time for us, you know, to enjoy the fact that, you know, we have now officially a candidate, but we are disappointed, and I hope that we don't have to bring, you know, sad news to some families tonight.
Now, the African Union has called on the CNE, the Electoral Commission, to ensure that the elections are peaceful, free, fair, and credible. What is your reaction to that?
You know, everybody's been asking that because of the fact that they know that there is no a good will from President Kabila to bring Congo into a fair election. So what should we do? It's, call the international community to push, maybe with more sanctions. That's going to bring President Kabila to respect the constitution and bring the country to the elections according to the schedule that has been given by the CENI. So we support actually what the African nation and the SADC did in order to bring, Congo into a peaceful transition through elections by December the 30th.
Abraham Luwakabuanga is the National Communications Secretary for the Opposition, UDPS. He spoke with VOA's Peter Clote from the Congolese capital, Kinshasa. Zimbabwe's main opposition party says it will legally challenge the official results showing that President Emmerson Mnangagwa won the July 30th election. Meanwhile, tension remains high, with human rights organizations saying the army is assaulting opposition members, an allegation the government has denied. Columbus Mavunga reports for VOA from Harare.
Douglas Monzora, Secretary General of the Movement for Democratic Change Alliance, says the party has gathered material to show that the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission inflated vote totals for the incumbent president.
The variance so far that we've been able to tell is that in Harare, President Mnangagwa's votes were exaggerated by 130,000. And in Bulawayo, I think it was 40,000. So we have been able to see the discrepancies in the figures that Zeka announced.
According to official figures, Mnangagwa garnered 50.8% of the vote, beating MDC candidate Nelson Chamisa's 44%. But Chamisa says he actually won 56% of the vote. Last week, opposition protests in Harare denouncing the Electoral Commission resulted in 6 deaths, several injuries, and 27 arrests. Tuesday, Magistrate Nyasha Vitorini granted $50 bail to each of those arrested and said the state had reduced the case to political rhetoric.
I'm satisfied that there is nothing placed before this court that shows that the accused persons are flighted. Nothing was brought to court. What was brought to court was that they have the propensity to go into the state. We have been saying something, we have the state prosecutor saying something else, and we have the paper saying something else. The story is so disjointed, so disjointed in material.
After the hearing, Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights Denford Halimani said the 27 should not have been arrested.
So we have no doubt that when these people are put on trial, if at all we are going to proceed to that stage, they are going to be acquitted.
Meanwhile, the head of Human Rights Watch in Southern Africa, Dewa Mavinga, told VOA that the Zimbabwean army is beating up people in opposition strongholds. Zimbabwe's Foreign Affairs Minister, Sibosiso Moyo, denies the charge.
Let me assure you that the military of this country generally is a well-trained force, and it is well-experienced in dealing with the population. It will not indulge in that. But what we are also witnessing is that there may be certain personalities who are purporting to be soldiers and are not soldiers and are going around imitating as if they are. And this is what we are busy investigating.
But Mavinga blames the government.
How do armed men with masks go about abducting people and also looking for MDC alliance officials? How does that happen in a country where there is law and order? And how does it suddenly become an issue? The government must take responsibility, because this type of lawlessness points to a clear pattern of targeting MDC officials.
The EU, US, Canadian and Swiss embassies issued a statement Tuesday expressing concern over, quote, excessive use of force by Zimbabwean authorities to quash opposition MDC Alliance protesters last week, unquote. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare. Today's Wednesday, August 8th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. I'm James Mbote in Washington. Daybreak Africa time is 15 minutes past the hour. Kenya has called for sustained efforts in the war against terror, as well as creating opportunities to deter the youth from being recruited into terror cells. Speaking Tuesday during ceremonies commemorating the 20th anniversary of the 1998 Nairobi U.S. Embassy bombing, Kenya's special envoy on counter-extremism, Martin Kimani, says this will ease the emergence of terror-related activities among the youth. Maureen Ojiambo reports from Nairobi.
I couldn't exactly tell where I was.
That if I would have met the men behind the bombing, I would have skinned them alive.
The memories from 20 years ago are still fresh in the minds of the survivors, as most of them were hopeful that they will one day be compensated. Speaking on Tuesday in Nairobi, Kenya's special envoy Martin Kimani says the government of Kenya has implemented strategies to strengthen counter-terrorism measures.
20 years later, Kenyans are proud to be fighting alongside our allies and friends for the safety and security of our families and our country. Our will as a people has been manifested in increased resources, coordination, training, and implementation of whole-of-government strategies to strengthen the operational means of countering terrorists. The result has been a sharp reduction in the number and severity of terrorist attacks. The threat remains, requiring continued vigilance. But our determined efforts have fundamentally blunted the ability of terrorist actors to destroy the fabric of our social, religious, and political life.
The U.S. ambassador to Kenya, Robert Godek, hailed Kenyans for having risen with a stronger determination to stand together for freedom, justice, and peace following the embassy bombing 20 years ago. He says the war against terrorism will continue.
In the moments and days that followed the blast, your heroism stands in tribute to compassion and to all that is best in humanity. But today, on the 20th anniversary of the attacks here in Nairobi and in Dar es Salaam, we say clearly and loudly that although we have suffered, we are not beaten. We will never let those who traffic death and destruction defeat us. As we reflect on the attack, we know that Al-Qaeda had not one, but three terrible goals. Their immediate purpose was to kill and destroy, but they had more in mind. They sought to divide us, to divide Kenya and the United States.
Survivors recounted the horror they underwent after the blast, as most of them say they are yet to be compensated as promised, 20 years since the worst terror attack in the country's history.
I'm not sure. Smoke was wafting up, and again, I thought, I'm going to die.
I couldn't exactly tell where I was. When I saw the white coats around me, I knew these are angels, and I was in heaven. So I was happy that I was going to see my children.
When I discovered that I was blind, I was very bitter, very much enraged. Imagine that if I would have met the men behind the bombing, I would have skinned them alive.
Authorities, however, insist all victims were compensated through funds provided by the U.S. Agency for International Development. The compensation cost was placed at $45 million, but many insist they did not get the funds. More than 200 people were killed in Nairobi's Al-Qaeda attack, as 5,000 sustained injuries. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, Maureen Ojiambo in Nairobi, Kenya.
In the Ivory Coast, the party of former President Laurent Gbagbo says it welcomes President Alassane Ouattara's pardon of 800 people, including former First Lady Simone Gbagbo. Mr. Ouattara said he did so in the interest of peace and true reconciliation. Mrs. Gbagbo had been serving a 20-year sentence for her role in the 2010 post-election violence. Jean-Gervais Tchéidé, vice president for finance of the Ivorian Popular Front Party, says the opposition has always made release of its members a condition for genuine dialogue and reconciliation. Now, he says the opposition is waiting for former President Gbagbo on trial for crimes against humanity in The Hague to return home.
We are very happy about that release because it's been about 7 years now that our people are in prison. So we are very, very happy about it, even though we know that most of them have been sick for months and years. but later is better than never.
The president said he pardoned them, Mrs. Babu and the others, in the interest of peace and true reconciliation. Do you think the opposition of former President Babu's party, are you willing to reconcile?
Well, we have always been ready and we have always been willing for reconciliation. And our main condition was that they should release all the prisoners. Now, the president has announced that he has taken a law, or in what we call in French system ordonnance, to release them. But so far, they have not been put out of prison. We are waiting for tomorrow when the situation is clear. But nevertheless, we welcome this new step, a good step in the direction of national reconciliation. We are now waiting for the president himself, President Babu, to come back to Cote d'Ivoire from The Hague.
So you say that you would like for President Babu to come back?
Yes.
But he's facing war crimes charges.
Yes, we know that they are working on target, but we are very hopeful for the coming trial of 1st of October. We are already sure that the president will come out because there's no real evidence against him. This has been proved, and the whole country is looking forward to his coming here in our country to a complete reconciliation.
The next election in Cote d'Ivoire is going to be in 2020, and I think President Alassane Ouattara cannot run again. Is that correct?
Well, he said that according to his understanding of the new constitution, he can be running for that election if he is willing to. So we are waiting for him. We are not opposed to anybody being candidate for election. The only thing we want is the Electoral Commission to be really independent, the same chances to everybody to compete. So we are not fearing anybody. So it is up to him to decide whether he's running for another term or not. The only thing that we are expecting the government to do is to create the conditions for real democratic election.
I want you to tell me, how is the former First Lady Simone Babo? How is she feeling about her release? And are you saying that they have not yet been released from prison?
No, not yet. We hope that this will be done tomorrow. So far, I've not been able to talk to her, so I don't know how she is feeling, but I guess she is feeling well. She is happy about that. Anybody who would be happy about being released after 7 years in prison, and she is ready to take a place in the struggle for democracy in Cote d'Ivoire. She is a freedom fighter, you know.
Jean-Guevel Teide is the vice president for finance of the Ivorian Popular Front Party of former President Laurent Gbagbo. He was speaking with me from the capital, Abidjan. In South Sudan, some opposition parties that signed the power-sharing agreement a week ago in Khartoum say they did so to give peace a chance, even though they disagree with some provisions of the deal. As Michael Ati reports from Juba, they say mediators promised to open further discussions on the contentious issues.
IGAD issued a press release in which the regional bloc said President Omar al-Bashir shall continue facilitating the talks until a revitalized peace agreement for South Sudan is finally signed. IGAD said Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta will send a team of experts to support the continuation of IGAD brokered peace process in Khartoum. Benghazi Joseph Bakasoro, leader of the South Sudan National Movement for Change, says initially, the South Sudan Opposition Alliance and the former detainees did not want to sign the deal because some of their demands were not included in the agreement, such as reverting back to the original 10 states. He says his group accepted to sign the deal after Sudanese Foreign Minister Al-Dildiri Muhammad Ahmad assured the opposition group in writing that he will reopen discussions on the outstanding issues in the next round of talks.
Most of us did not like to sign the agreement. That is a given fact. But based on respect to the heads of the states, and again accepting that any outstanding issue is subject for further discussion, I think we have to succumb to that, and we are waiting to start a debate on the outstanding issues.
Both the South Sudan Opposition Alliance and the former detainees raised concerns about a provision in the deal that provides for a formation of an independent boundaries commission to determine the number of states in the Republic of South Sudan. Bakasoro says His group, which is part of the South Sudan Opposition Alliance, only agreed to sign the deal with the caveat that such issues will be resolved in a timely fashion.
That made us to sign the agreement, and we are hoping that in the near future, depending on the schedule, we are going to continue the discussion to finalize on the outstanding issues and then to complete the HLRF, and then we wait for the final signing.
Peter Mayan, head of the People's Liberal Party, which is part of an umbrella group referred to as other political parties, says his group agreed to sign the deal with the same understanding. He says the success or failure of the agreement will depend on whether or not it is implemented.
South Sudanese really are in dire need of peace, irrespective of the positions of the parties, irrespective of the outstanding issues. People want guns to go silent. People want opportunity in order to rebuild the economic, and people also want to embark in a genuine democratic progress and transformation.
Mayan says once a final agreement is signed, all warring parties must work to provide services to the South Sudanese and develop the country. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum, Sudan.
The UN refugee and migration agencies have helped 116 Somali refugees return home from war-torn Yemen, although conditions in parts of Somalia remain unsafe. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The boat, which sailed from Aden, Yemen on Saturday, arrived in the port of Berbera in Somalia the day after. Among its passengers were female heads of households, several students hoping to resume their educations, and a critically ill patient traveling with his family. Since the so-called Assisted Spontaneous Return Program began in 2017, the UN Refugee Agency, an international organization for migration, have helped more than 2,000 Somali refugees return to their homes of origin. UNHCR spokesman William Spindler says the Somali refugees are living under precarious conditions and, like the Yemenis themselves, are not receiving adequate aid and protection.
Refugees are vulnerable to early marriage, child labor, detention, and to the risk of dangerous onward movement. These circumstances have added to the urgent need for UNHCR to increase humanitarian support, mitigate risks, and find lasting solutions for these people.
Spindler tells VOA that UNHCR is not promoting returns to Somalia because they are not sustainable. But he says his agency is responding to demands from refugees for help to return home because the alternative of remaining in Yemen is worse.
From our perspective, the situation in Somalia is far from safe, but at the same time, Yemen, as we know, is facing the world's worst humanitarian crisis with outbreaks of disease, with food insecurity, and with an ongoing conflict that has displaced millions of people.
When the refugees arrive in Somalia, Spindler says they receive a cash grant and an allowance, as well as household items, food assistance from the World Food Program, and an education allowance for primary school children. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Today is the deadline for candidates who want to participate in the Democratic Republic of Congo's December 23rd presidential election to register. And that's it for this Wednesday, August 8th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Greg Burns, I'm James Butter, wishing you a good day.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, Jean-Pierre Bemba, the former Democratic Republic of Congo vice president, is planning to run for president in the December election. Bemba's ICC war crimes conviction was recently overturned on appeal. Politics in the DRC on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Join your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal.